From tintametry to vaccines, Dora Varga is a postdoc on the University of London project, The Reluctant Internationalists, a history of public health and international organisations, movements and experts in 20th century Europe. She has a PhD in modern European and women and gender history from Rutgers University, and has won numerous awards and fellowships, including at Rutgers, the Max Planck Institute for the History of Science in Berlin, and the Philadelphia Area Center for the History of Science. She will be speaking on traveling pathogens, flying vaccines, a story of failure in global polio vaccination.
Thank you. I'm going to try to zoom in into a case study to give you an example of how what happens when vaccines move around. So let me begin by going to just one second to the beginning of the presentation. All right. Let me begin by 1955. On April 12th, Dr. Thomas Francis made an announcement that shook the world. After one of the largest field trials in human history, he revealed that Jonas Salk's polio vaccine worked. The vaccine was licensed in the matter of 2 hours. The significance of this event cannot be overstated. The Salk vaccine is still heralded as one of the greatest achievements of the 20th century in medicine, and it's still, or rather again, used widely today on a global scale. Polio, and there you can see Elvis himself getting the polio shot to get even more people on board. Polio was definitely a global problem at this time, and there are several reasons for why polio became so important in the scientific community as well as in shaping public health in the 1950s and 60s. What is probably the most important here is that it had a global presence. It was everywhere. Everyone was afflicted, and all social classes. So it wasn't a disease of poverty. Everybody was in it together and had to find a solution to the problem. So the good news of the vaccine spread quickly, and soon nations all over the world started using this new technology. Between 1955 and 1960, the United States exported 70 million doses of vaccine, while Canada's Connaught laboratories exported the vaccine to 44 countries. On top of this, domestic salt production began in several countries. By the late 1950s, we can safely say that the salt vaccine went global, in many cases with success, and in some, it met with failure. The Hungarian salt vaccination was one of these failures. The government imported the vaccine in 1957 in the face of a severe epidemic and gradually widened the program to include 1/4 of the population. However, in 2 years, in 1959, Hungary was hit by yet another severe epidemic, and soon almost 2,000 children would fall prey to the disease, prompting the state and the medical profession to reevaluate their success. How could this happen when a high number of children were supposed to have been protected by the Salk vaccine? What went wrong, and who was to blame? Public health officials, parents, ministers, and doctors tried to work out the reasons for what happened, what appeared to be a complete failure. They engaged in a conversation on effectiveness and prevention by using and producing medical data in various ways, clashing lay and medical experiences, and revealing a broad set of expectations. The introduction of the Salk vaccine, its perceived success and eventual failure, was an overtly political issue that manifested on the pages of medical journals and daily newspapers and during visits to the doctor and in private conversations. The uncertainties of knowledge and practice in polio vaccination brought to the fore sweeping problems with high stakes at all levels of governance and daily life. The controversy that followed the 1959 epidemic provides a glimpse at how a new vaccine, introduced worldwide in the course of a few years, plays out locally, raising the question, to what extent can vaccination with a particular vaccine in different locales be interpreted as the same? When we think of vaccination on a global scale, we often consider vaccines as objects moving across countries and continents. However, they also move from clinical trials to field, from national to transnational use, and are translated from scientific debates to vaccination policy, and to parents and vaccinees. If we interrogate the key moments of how scientific research moves on to public health intervention and across political dividing lines, cultures and societies, vaccines reveal to be part of a larger conceptual framework, and as medical technologies cannot be divorced from the local expectations and interpretations created in the process. While the Hungarian story of the Salk vaccination failure adds to a growing scholarship that questioned the seeming universality of biomedical technologies, such as vaccines, the discussions and debates brought to light by an epidemic crisis also reveal the very tangible consequences of international medical and political rivalries. While the government was consistent in emphasizing its own heroic role in the fight against polio throughout 1959, the new epidemic did bring change in how it saw the rates of vaccination. And I'm going to look at some of the circles of blame, of who was to blame for the epidemic. Up until the outbreak of the summer of 1959, the state frequently boasted in newspapers of the success in immunizing masses of people with the vaccine, 2.5 million to be exact. They claimed that basically all the children in the target population were vaccinated. However, the evaluation of the vaccination rate changed quickly in official communication when the first signs of an epidemic started to show. Who wouldn't remember an anxiety with which we looked to news about poliomyelitis cases 2 years ago, and what a weight had been lifted off the shoulders of worried parents when the good news spread. The aircraft bearing the first batch of Salk vaccine has landed at the airport. We gave news almost every day about steps taken to prevent the further spread of disease, among them the credit of millions of forints with which the government secured vaccines for the most endangered age groups. The greatest wish of all parents was to have their children protected against the dangerous disease that often leaves severe marks for life. All the more surprising is that, according to information recently published by the Health Ministry, a lot of children in the capital had not been taken to be immunized, and based on examinations, it can be said the rising number of cases are caused exactly by this. And this is from a newspaper from 1959. The argument was thus simple and outright. The government did everything in its power to curb the disease and through great sacrifices provided protection for the children. But it was the parents who had neglected their duties and with their irresponsible behavior had caused a new epidemic. But how many were a lot of unvaccinated or partially vaccinated children? Was participation in vaccination campaign against polio really a problem throughout? Or was citing low vaccination rates instead a tool in the hands of the government looking for a scapegoat? The number of children to be vaccinated in each age group was set according to census data by the Central Statistical Office. Vaccine distribution was then calculated based on the number of local eligible children, and so was the vaccination result. County reports to the Health Ministry reveal, however, that data from the Statistical Office did not match local reality. Some local physicians saw deficiencies in announcing the campaign and informing the public about it. One of them pointed out that it was that time was very short in July to adequately advertise the vaccination campaign. Apart from posters and radio news, the local hygiene department tried disseminating information by employing Red Cross and party activists, and even literally drumming up eligible families in railroad stations. A drummer would shout the details of the campaign during the rush hours of dawn and late evening when agricultural and factory workers were commuting to and from their workplace. However, the participation in the vaccination did not reach the desired effect. Other counties were much more optimistic about their efficiency and did not report problems of any kind. One hygiene station, for instance, remarked that, and I quote, "The vaccination in the whole of the county has been executed smoothly and according to plans." Another county recounted even bigger success, and I quote, "The result of the vaccination is 105%. This number proves that as an outcome of the good work of providing information, the population of the whole county understood the significance of the vaccination and complied gladly to our requests." This number was never questioned by the ministry. The uncertainty with numbers that became apparent in the reports mentioned above originated from the lack of clear registration system of vaccination. This might sound astonishing to us today, but given our preconceptions of how a state socialist regime works, But it seems from the documents of the health ministry that the state did not actually know who was vaccinated or how many doses they received. They had a hard time finding out who had polio. You can see one of the report cards there that I found in the archives. But they were complaining that physicians are just not reporting. They're not telling the, not communicating with the hospitals. The hospitals are not communicating with the ministry. So it's very difficult to know what's going on, which is very not what we would normally expect from like the country of the communist bloc. The numbers that local hygiene stations submitted to the ministry refer to the number of doses administered only in order to calculate the amount of vaccine that was needed for the next campaign. So it wasn't basically people they were counting, it was the vaccine they were counting. In 1957, the National Public Health Institute sent out inquiries to local offices to gain information about how many polio patients were vaccinated and to evaluate the effectiveness of the vaccine. But the registration system was still in a test phase by July 1959. So this was a problem that they knew throughout the 50s, but nobody could really do anything about it. The lack of a clear and organized administrative system posed challenges for scientific inquiries. Shortly after the epidemic in 1959 broke out, the National Public Health Institute contacted hospital directors in larger Hungarian cities to collect blood samples for the examination of immunity against polio and the effect of the Salk vaccine. Blood would have to be collected from children staying in hospitals with non-polio cases and without fever. Vaccination histories would need to be taken, I quote, based on vaccination cards or the account of parents. Instead of choosing to leave out the children without written vaccination records from the study, they choose to rely on memory instead. This means that either they were afraid that otherwise they wouldn't have sufficient numbers of children in the study, or that it was not a fixed or given reality in their eyes that anybody would have vaccination cards. Apart from organizational issues, the quality of equipment used in the campaigns also raised concern. It was already occasionally challenging to get the vaccine to its destination due to an insufficient number of trucks, many of which kept breaking down regularly. The needles supplied by the health ministry for the vaccination of such bad quality that it was impossible to be certain if adequate doses actually made it into the bodies of the children. As a solution, many doctors started using their own needles, not the ones supplied by the ministry, and that worked against the idea of a centrally organized and executed vaccination in which methods, quantities, and tools were standardized and controllable. Inadequate reporting, the absence of a clear and functioning vaccination system, and deficiencies in equipment all could contribute to the possibility of a new epidemic in 1959. The confusion over numbers, data collection, and reporting also complicated vaccine evaluation. These questions of quality were, however, overshadowed by issues of quantity, the amount of vaccine used throughout the campaigns. The method used by Hungarian authorities was called the Danish method. Denmark served as the model in the quest to curb polio in Hungary. It produced its own Salk vaccine. It was in the forefront of free mass vaccination and could show significant results in both prophylaxis and polio treatment. Vaccination was voluntary and free of charge for the citizens, and intracutaneous shots were administered. The dosage was 0.3 milliliters per shot in three doses, followed by a fourth booster administered intramuscularly. The dosage was exactly why the Danish method was so appealing to Hungarians. The intracutaneous method required one-third of the vaccine that you would need for the intramuscular method, which was the original method that Salk used in the United States. At this time, the Hungarian government was in a very delicate position regarding international politics. After the crushing of the 1956 revolution, it was borderline illegitimate in the eyes of many Western powers, and the UN committee was forming with the leadership of the United States to discuss the Soviet intervention and the actions of the current Hungarian government. The country ran into problems in securing sufficient vaccine and saw the obstacles as being tools of power in the hands of Western powers. Many of the most, making the most of the amount of vaccine they had access to was an important consideration. While Denmark's vaccination method and results were defined as a success and a model for Hungary, on an international scale, there was no clear agreement on what constituted successful immunization programs and how efficiency could be evaluated on a national scale. It was difficult to tell if the method worked with the same efficacy or not. It was particularly difficult in polio because not all polio cases cause paralysis, and polio doesn't come every year. It's completely, you can't really predict it, where it's epidemic. Moreover, not all Hungarian physicians were convinced that the intracutaneous method was the best utilization of the vaccine, or that it would provide the same protection as the intramuscular method. The amount of vaccine used also came under debate. According to this physician I met, mentioned earlier, who wrote a report on problems, vaccination brigades were fully committed to the method and quantity chosen by the health ministry. But in larger places, by which he probably meant cities and hospitals and health centers, alternative opinions and doubts voiced by doctors could have caused concern and suspicion among the public. This last issue was perhaps the most persistent problem in the course of polio vaccination with the Salk vaccine. The question of the vaccination method was not settled while Salk vaccination was used in Hungary. And it was still, while the intramuscular method made a comeback in early 1959, it was sort of fluctuating between the two. Physicians and health officials were not the only ones looking for a reason for the severe epidemic. These debates filtered down to the public and the parents and led to bitter explanations. It is common knowledge among Hungarians living with polio today that the reason for the 1956 epidemic was that the state cut the vaccine doses in half, either because it didn't want to or couldn't pay for the vaccine, because it was spending too much on heavy industry and other causes. And these uncertainties could have come from the doctors, it could have come from the state itself, which when it was initially acquiring the vaccine, tried to check the enthusiasm by saying that it will not be enough for everyone initially, and that could have left a mark. So what this story tells us with these rumors is that people did expect the state to provide the protection, especially for their children against polio. It was the state itself that set up these expectations through its rhetoric of paternal roles and through propaganda emphasizing the importance and care of mother and child. However, people also counted on poor quality, insufficient quantity, and corruption in the distribution of any product or service provided by the state. Moreover, the state was by no means perceived as friendly by many, especially just the year after the revolution. So willful deception that endangered the children was not wholly and unimaginable by Hungarians. And I'll just go through this very quickly because I'm pressed for time. Blood analysis of people who did get polio reveals that over a third of them were fully vaccinated, received three doses, which was very surprising. Vaccine efficacy was initially determined by Hungarians after this outbreak to be 70 to 80%, and it was revised in 1961 to be 60 to 70%. This was a very significant difference from American figures of 80 to 95% if you get all the four doses. Towards the end of the epidemic, there was a shift from blaming parents and anything else to basically pinpointing the vaccine to be inefficient, and that was just not as good as a technology as something else that they were embarking on very quickly, which is, and this is how this story feeds back into the global health policies. Hungary was, and probably one of the main reasons was because of this 1959 epidemic, was one of the first nations to start national vaccination with the Sabin vaccine. They did a short trial in November and then very quickly just rolled out the vaccine. This put Hungary in the group of Czechoslovakia and the USSR, along with some other countries all over the world, that became the basis and reference point when considering the Sabin vaccine to be applied basically widespread across the globe and to be considered as a tool for eradication. So this is where it becomes a very important thing, this Hungarian switch. And you can see here on this picture, Albert Sabin in Hungary with one of the key, this man with the mustache is one of the key Hungarian virologists. So what does this all tell us about the universality of vaccines? Experiences with the Salk vaccine on a global scale have been far from uniform. In fact, the effectiveness and long-term protection of the Salk vaccine had been in the focus of investigations of international comparisons in the last 3 years of the 1950s. It appeared that the Salk vaccine had failed to fulfill the hopes and dreams of other countries as well. In a paper presented at the 5th International Poliomyelitis Conference, Alexander Langmuir described the rising trends of polio cases in the late 50s as, and I quote, a sobering experience. Hungary's experience with the Salk vaccine became widely cited in a growing debate on vaccine efficacy. This became even more amplified when the country switched to the Sabin vaccine, and that switch was successful. Hungary became a case study as the Salk-Sabin rivalry played out on a global scale. In the scientific debates that ultimately shaped global health policies in polio control, Hungarian experiences became reduced to a couple of figures and percentages. So basically all this complexity and the messiness of what happens when what happened with the Salk vaccine entering in Hungary was rendered invisible, and it stayed that way, and this is what was used. So 70% of population was vaccinated, and this was the big epidemic that happened. That means that it wasn't effective, and there was not much more discussion about the reasons. So can the Salk vaccine in Hungary be considered to be the same Salk vaccine, say, in the UK or the United States or the USSR even? Can this object, the Salk vaccine, be divorced from all the messiness of moving through space and time, its use, its materiality, the method of its administration, the expectations, meanings, and practices created in the process? The Hungarian story suggests not. And the stakes are high, as current challenges and the attempts to tackle them in the global polio eradication program today demonstrate. Yet thinking of vaccines more often than not are considered to be stable and universal objects, certainly when it comes to designing and executing global health practices. This is something that doesn't really get considered. When it comes to it, we tend to ask, do vaccines work? Perhaps we should be asking, do vaccinations work? And I'll leave it at that, and thank you very much.